All the Rage with John Bowd on www.tracksfm.org.
Welcome to a fashionably late John Bowd's All the Rage, because we're live. And obviously, there's a lot going on here in the UK. Obviously, the Royal Mail postal strike, which is up and running, but it's 2 days more of action tomorrow and Friday. Reluctantly, it's the last resort we would ever use, considering the economic crisis out there with all workers in the UK. But we are aware that they're using that to try and starve their workers back to work and to sell their contracts of employment off. If they want to refute this, www.tracksfm.org. And there's a chat room there. Please come on and refute exactly what I just stated. If you don't want to refute that, then face the consequences. And so much happening in the world today. A particular popular MP was selected in the Labour Party, and the Labour movement, its good grassroots following, are over the moon. And many more. John, take it away.
Okay, well, we are going to do more of the great trade union fight back this evening. We're going to talk first up about a kind of add-on to a story a couple of weeks ago that we discussed. A TikTok subcontractor named Teleperformance, who have been involved in union busting, low pay, but specifically not providing for their workers in Colombia who have to moderate disturbing material that was leading to traumatic working conditions for many of them. Well, Edwin Palma Aguirre, a minister for labor relations in Colombia, said, quote, "We have officially decided to start an investigation against Teleperformance. We have notified the company and invite all workers and trade union organisations in the country to provide us with evidence of alleged violations of labour standards." End of quote. The minister went on to state specifically that the investigation into these terrible working conditions by Time magazine and the Bureau of Investigative Journalism is the thing that's made them act on this. So a very successful investigation. According to Time magazine, who have reported the follow-up story, this follow-up to the story, quote, "The Teleperformance is a call centre giant based in France with offices worldwide. In one of Colombia's largest employers with more than 42,000 workers in the country. While its TikTok's moderators are a small fraction of the number, they perform an important role for the short-form video giant, making sure that the feeds of users in Latin America remain free from traumatizing content that might cause users to quit the lucrative app." End of quote. Just a quick reminder on this. What they were doing is basically assessing videos to see if they contained violence or violence towards people or animals, or other types of disturbing content that I'm sure you can imagine. And of course, one of the things that was happening is they just weren't being supported properly. They were just being made to sit and watch one horrible video after another and just go from, you know, get on with it, as it were. So a lot of people dropping out and suffering, et cetera, et cetera. Shares in Teleperformance, listed in France, fell 34% upon the announcement of the Colombian Labour Department investigation. Teleperformance later stated they were going to buy back $152 million worth of their own shares, describing this as a good use of its available cash. I thought that was supposed to be illegal, isn't it? People seem to do it a lot these days. Never mind. Anyway, this is a story. This story is a reminder that no workers should ever be invisible. And speaking of invisible work, there's an article in The Verge this week has shone a light on another area of work, so to speak, being generated by Amazon. The article is by Naima McIntyre and Rosie Bradbury and covers Amazon sweatshops in California, among other places, being observed by people in electronic sweatshops in Costa Rica and India. It also talks about one in Bolton, England, which we'll come to. Basically, what happens is the item pickers, now known as stowers for some reason, are observed by cameras that record their movements, which are then reviewed for various infractions. When the stower fails in some way, the video is sent to someone in the countries mentioned, then sent to management to supposedly improve Amazon's machine learning tools. The writers of this article spoke with workers at various sites. Now, stories about monitoring workers, especially by dystopian companies like Amazon, are not exactly news, but I think this one is worthy of our attention as it involves specifically pitting workers against each other, even though both are grossly exploited and underpaid. This is the worst effects of our electronic age. While we constantly hear gleeful threats of how we will all be put out of work by the machines one day, in fact, what we see is them being used to work us further into ill health and some form of forced medical retirement. Video reviewers interviewed by the Bureau of Investigative Journalism reported physical problems, including headaches, eye pain, and even deterioration in their eyesight. They said they were made to hit punishing targets with tracking software logging any periods of inactivity outside of designated break times. While one expert recommends that people doing video annotation should take screen breaks every half an hour, some said their targets did not allow for this to happen. The Bureau, investigative journalism again, interviewed 33 current and former Amazon employees, including 21 video reviewers. I should say, by the way, the Bureau of Investigative Journalism also involved in this story. I should have said that at the top. Apologies. Anyway, they say in the article, Amazon has developed an extensive range of applications that use computer vision, a branch of machine learning in which computers process large numbers of images and learn to recognize patterns. Videos are anywhere between 2 seconds and 2 minutes. Reviewers can watch thousands a day. Shifts are usually 8 or 9 hours, but can increase to 11 hours during busy periods such as Christmas and Black Friday, also known as strike time to those of us in the CWU. Hey. Reviewers like Verge in India get through, I hope I've pronounced your name right, get through up to 8,000 videos a day, with their output ranked against that of their colleagues. The relentless pace of their work can take a serious physical toll. They are paid as little as $252 a month. Verge said, it is very hectic work. We shouldn't blink our eyes while reviewing a video because our accuracy will go less. We have to be on screen at least 8 hours, which is kind of painful. Yeah, I bet it fucking is, mate. What an amazing sentence. We shouldn't blink our eyes while reviewing videos. So do you do that thing that they do to Alex in A Clockwork Orange then? It's mental. Sadip Bhattacharya, assistant professor of the All India Institute of Medical Sciences, Dogar, said video reviewers are at risk of digital eye strain, symptoms of which include dry eyes, impaired vision and headaches. If the resolution is low, he said, there is a risk of permanent eye damage. He also recommended screen breaks every 20 to 30 minutes, but some workers interviewed by the Bureau felt it was difficult or impossible to take breaks outside of their allotted times. Video reviewers said their primary role was stock management, but they can also record errors made by their colleagues overseas. Two former workers said reviewers could raise stow etiquette issues if they saw stowers breaking Amazon's rules on camera. A former video reviewer in India said, quote, we will not be able to even blink our eyes as we need to keep a watch on the videos. That impacted my health a lot. It makes the eyes really dry because you constantly stare at that screen. End of quote. So basically, the monitors are also tightly monitored. Managers keep track of reviewers' performances with real-time analytics, and they must maintain a high accuracy rate between 95 and 99.5%. They are not allowed to make mistakes, according to one worker. In Amazon's peak period of October to December, reviewers said their work increased significantly with less time between videos, and one said bathroom breaks were more difficult to take. Another India-based worker said he couldn't take time off for the Hindu festival of Diwali. In 2020, Amazon Warehouse in Bolton, England, rolled out a new system relying on computer vision and manual checks from workers in Costa Rica and India. Workstations have been remodeled to include 3 new cameras trained on stowing stations, which would register the location of the product, largely eliminating the need for handheld scanners. Amazon said this would, quote, shave crucial seconds off the stowing of each item. Crucial seconds off of putting an item somewhere. End of amazing. Workers in Bolton talked about how it dictated, in their words, how you stand and the way you move, etc. Oh bollocks! Sorry, I've had 2 seconds, Dave. I just had a bit of a problem. There you go. Sorry,
no problem, Johnny. We're live radio. We're a little bit like Dennis Norton's. It will be all right on the night.
Well, it's a bit like that with my fucking laptop because the USB ports keep shutting down, so I can't actually spin my screen.
John, we absolutely. This is Trax FM, and as the working world finds out. shit happens.
Yes, yeah. So anyway, the folks in Bolton, the workers in Bolton said that they these things dictate how you stand and the way you move. Hopefully you've still got me on the right fucking microphone as well. I'm going to check that while I'm at it. Yes, you have. You got me on the good one. Okay. To maximise the computer's chances of success, stowers were told to ensure they were in view of the camera and to use clean and straight movements when putting an item away. In cases where the system failed, footage was sent to video reviewers to verify. Many of the error reports, here or in California, contained the stowers' violations, and this came from the new system, according to one report. Amazon disputes that the automated system was used to discipline workers. Stowing metrics are shared with employees and managers to identify strengths and opportunities for growth. And they claim, that was a quote, and claiming they use it for inventory purposes. However, Isaac, a former stower in a Michigan warehouse, received a write-up after accumulating around 4 minutes of time off task. He was feeling unwell and went to get some medication and used the bathroom at the end of his break. Despite explaining this to a manager, he still received a written warning. Interestingly, the manager the article spoke to in California, I think this was one in California, disputed much of his claims, but did discuss the work as, in their words, mind-numbing, as well as talking about how your brain dies a bit while you're doing it. The article also looked at how such tech is being used in the Amazon Go supermarkets. That's the ones where you scan your phone on the way in, scan items, and then you leave with the cost of the items coming out of your account. So you don't actually have to speak to a human being or even one of those machines that you have to pay into. Amazon Go's marketing trades heavily on the futuristic novelty of a largely automated store without checkouts, but in reality, the role of the shop assistant has simply been outsourced to video reviewers in India. Here's another quote from the article. For their part, some workers in India and Costa Rica said they were unsure exactly how Amazon used all of this data. We have no idea where this particular data was going, one worker said. We were never given such knowledge of what exactly is happening in the back end. So this is not only terrible by its own measure, but another example of offshoring this kind of work to get it out of sight of the rest of us. And funnily enough, while I was writing up the notes on this particular story last night, that was before I saw the truly ludicrous so-called deal that the smug-faced pussies of Royal Mail have tried to throw at their workforce, none of which we're actually going to take because we're stronger than you are. Anyway, back to the main story. There is unfortunately a fight back going on already. In California, a new law aims to address the conditions endured by these Amazon workers. It is Assembly Bill 701, which came into effect at the start of this year. It prohibits performance targets from being set at a level that could pose a safety risk or prevent sufficient bathroom or meal breaks. It also gives warehouse workers the right to request 3 months' worth of their own productivity data from the company. Lorena Gonzalez wrote the bill when she was a state representative, and she now heads the California Labor Federation. She was concerned about productivity quotas causing injuries in the workplace and believed that giving workers access to their own data would be the first step in resisting management by algorithm. She said the following quote, "The only way to fight back against algorithmic management is to refuse to go quicker. But an individual can't do that alone. Until workers come together and organise as a collective against the kind of speed-up that happens with computer management, then they are just going to require people to go faster and faster." Again, interesting point there on a side issue. Far be it for me to recommend to any of the union members I represent that were your company to force something into existence, all you have to do is just do your job properly, and then ultimately it fails anyway. If everybody's doing it, then they can't actually do anything about it, can they? Anyway, Amari, the stower in California, said the law had made a tangible difference in the warehouse and managers were no longer regularly reprimanding people for falling behind on their productivity rates, although workers could still be disciplined for other violations. So, a terrible idea, a terrible story, but I think at the end there, the signs of a small victory growing against the dystopian global behemoth that is Amazon, because again, when workers band together, they can't actually touch us. Well, you've got more history and stuff like this than me, though, so what do you make of all this?
It's interesting because every time we do a show, John, I'd say 90% of the time it's about employment, it's about jobs. It's because I don't know anything about anything, right? And I'd say 80 to 90% of the time, putting aside people's politics, you know, I'll vote Conservative, Gordon Brown sold our gold and whatever. I get that. Okay, we're a bit tribalistic on that. I'm a Republican. I'm a Democrat. MAGA, blah, blah, blah. But the main thing, what you do 90% of the time is talk about jobs, because we need jobs to live. We need to go on holiday, get the car, buy our kids clothes and food. And it's frightening, because every time you talk about jobs, it gets, certainly over the last 10 years, for me it's 40, it's about jobs, basic fundamental rights at work. It bothers me, John. Because it's yeah. not like, we're talking about, say, America, for example, some of the stories you've mentioned about, and they're young kids, really, in Starbucks, you know, and they've decided to unionise. Doesn't it scare people that people have said, well, oh, God, you know, that a company is throwing millions at it to stop these kids unionising? Doesn't it bother people? Doesn't it say, oh, that's odd, isn't it? There's only six of them. You've put £1 million to stop them having a ballot. Doesn't it bother people? Because every time you do a story such as this about basic working rights at work, and about the establishment, I'm talking about the establishment, you know, we use that word they, why no one actually says, that's odd, you know. But no, it just seems that there's a thing that these six people are causing trouble. I just, beggars belief. So my view on anything with work, you know, it's whether we can reach a place in society where we have a forum that someone somewhere legally sits down and says, well, I'm on the side of you, and we're here to decide whether Mr. Employer is right or Mr. Employer is wrong. And if Mr. Employer, Mr. Mega Rich Employer especially, is wrong, I'm going to fine you every week until you put it right. John?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of feedback on that. I agree. I mean, what makes, you know, them scared of you? Well, because they know that a unionized workforce is a powerful workforce, whether it's six people or 600 or 6,000. They know that a unionized workforce acts collectively and can get what they need and what they want, because they're all, you know, to use a kind of obvious metaphor, they're all on the same page. They're not running around competing with each other in stupid little ways over things like bonuses that don't amount to sod all at the end of the year. They are united in their front, and they know exactly what they want. And that's one of the things about the conflict we're involved in, which is interesting, because the more Royal Mail and their truly pitiful CEO try to divide us, the more united I've noticed people becoming. Now, obviously, it's very anxiety-inducing, as all kind of worker relations are. One of the reasons why I'm so angry and disgusted with this company is because of them intentionally promoting a situation like that in order to make everybody's life worse. It's a terrible thing. You know, it's bad enough to and intolerable to start doing that with your workplace anyway, such as Amazon being a good example. But, you know, the things we've just talked about here, people effectively fucking up their eyesight because they're not allowed to have the breaks. One of the things, just to hark back to it, you know, they said that they do sort of 8 to 9 hours a day, and then they do 10, 11 hours during the peak time. So basically, the whole time you're running around in Amazon because it's Black Friday or coming up to Christmas, and you're doing your best to get all that stuff moving, there's somebody constantly watching you to see if you screw up so that they can give you a written warning. I mean, why would you even want to do that? Why would you even treat your workforce? What are they? I mean, if you're getting the parcels out the door, what is it you think they're going to do that they screw up that's so terrible that it's something that needs to be continually watched all of the time? And, you know, these companies are obsessed with saving money. This is what you spend your money on? Amazing, you know. So employing people to do awful jobs like this, you know, knacker out your eyesight, cause yourself great anxiety and suffering over whether you're even going to get paid, never mind when you're going to get paid. You know, just make sure you don't have a toilet break that's a bit too long. This is inhumane to treat people this way. This is truly disgusting, appalling, indecent behavior, and call it what it is. And that's before we get into why we would reject it anyway out of basic, you know, worker rights and dignity. So they know that. The point is they know they're doing the wrong thing. And that's why somebody like Bezos, who literally can afford to fly into space, who after flying into actual space goes to Disneyland, not with members of his family, but on his own, and buys Space Mountain, the ride for children, and goes on it all on his own. So no one else is anywhere around it. You know, these psychos who try to remove God from everything and become God themselves, whether it's Elon Musk or Jeff Bezos or any of those, all of them are scared to death of a united workforce. They're not only scared to death of it being united across their entire company, they're scared to death of it in one workplace, such as Bessemer, Alabama. That's why they go to extraordinary lengths to try and prevent it from happening. They do that because that is their ideology, and that is why they can't be bargained or reasoned with. That is why they have to be overcome. And the day will come when Amazon come to their united workforce on their knees. And the day is going to come very, very soon, I predict within the next couple of weeks or so, when Royal Mail are going to do the same. And what they're going to be talking about is not their attempt to force us to do this, that, and the other. We're going to be negotiating the terms of their surrender. Simple as that. Because this workforce, because the workforce in Amazon, because the workforce in Starbucks, etc., they're not going to take it anymore, because you can only take away so much from people until they've got nothing. And when they've got nothing, they've got nothing to lose. There is nothing I'm saying here that is anything other than a cliche, because it is so blatantly obvious. It's been around for years and years and years. And still the harbingers of doom that are the neoliberals, whose political ideology has most certainly run out of steam at best, they can't seem to get that. They're not, you know, in the words of, or in the style of Mr. Trump, if you'll permit me, they're not clever people, folks. They're not. They're not the brightest and the best. They're not the smartest. They're not the great business innovators and leaders. They're just thickos that got lucky. They went to the right schools. They greased the right palms. They sucked the right dicks. That's the only reason they're actually in the position they're in. Or because their dad, mum and dad had enough money to buy them a garage bigger than your house where they could set up their online book-selling company. That's it. Basically, that's why I think they do it. They do it because that's their ideology. But their ideology is failing because we're switched on to them now. You can only put people in so much precarity before they start getting used to it. And if they get used to it, they realise that things can't get any worse, so they can only get better. I don't know. Maybe that answers the question. I don't know.
Just a quick one, John. I'm going to do a knock it on the head, doodle ambarda type view. Okay, so John spoke about a group of workers, probably not where you live, probably in another country, and it doesn't affect you, and who gives a you know what. But I'll tell you, to tell you how far we, how close it is to home. This show is broadcast at 7 p.m. UK time. So we work for a company that know it's 7 p.m. UK time. It's deliberately put on at 7 p.m. UK time because me and John would have finished our duty at 7 p.m. We're not on duty, so we're not representative and using work time to come on here and talk to you. And the reason why we put it at 7 p.m, with Royal Mail, we have a business code of standards that says we can't defamate the Royal Mail name or we'll be sacked. This is true.
I wish you told me that a half hour ago.
You're not on duty, John, because we deliberately put you on after your duty. This is in your spare time and my spare time, and this station is run financially independently. So this is what we do. Is this happening in Africa or deep America? No, this is happening right here, right now. That because a company's privatised, we're not allowed to criticise it. Its way of working, its bullying, its ability to destroy a 500-year-old service. A company that had King Charles write to us and thank us. He was Prince Charles then. No one prompted him. He just thanked us for risking our lives to deliver during the pandemic. This is a company, that a service that delivers to every address 7 days a week during World War II, and in the 60s, two deliveries, and obviously in 2003, one delivery, but it was every delivery, every address, 6 days a week. People that look out for old people, young people, people who leave their keys in their car accidentally, people who leave their keys, people that have stopped burgling, people that have saved lives, but we're not allowed to criticise them when they decide to destroy our contracts. Oh, you're talking about the 1960s, Ed. No. This is now. This show goes out at 7. Me and John can talk about it and criticise them and can talk about disputes, but we can't do it within duty time because under the business code of standards, privatisation rules, we can't criticise that company because it has to look good on the stock market. This is the UK. This is Apathy UK. 20th century business or 21st century business. Get used to it and watch your show over your shoulder, John.
Yeah, you got to look good on the stock market, apparently. No, I don't. I just have to deliver a good service that customers have paid for, and that includes the entire service, speaking to area managers, not just the bits that you crib money off of. That includes the letters. But also, your shares have been bumping around the arse end of £2 to £2.50 for about 3 months now. So shareholders are out there. Do you really think Royal Mail Management doing a good job? Honestly, is this what you bought shares for? You muppet. Give it to us. We'll make sure you turn a profit because we actually give a shit about
this. Look, what shareholders need to understand, and I wish you luck in whatever you do in life. Good luck to you. Make lots of money.
Get a real job.
The fact of the matter is, you're certainly one of the people in this conversation actually gets out there and gets it done and makes it what it is. And you in the workforce, whether you be Amazon, Starbucks, Hermes or John Lewis or wherever, Tesco's, you make the company you work for what it is. Don't ever, ever let them tell you you're doing us a favour. John?
Absolutely. Well, exactly the point I'm making with the story we talked about, the two stories we talked about tonight, especially the Amazon one. You know, Amazon is big, bad, ugly and nasty looking. They can't win this. They can't win it if their workforce decide that it's not going to happen. And you know what I'd really love to see? I suppose I'm allowed to say this on this radio show because I can't get any trouble for this. You know, at the time this is broadcasting live, we're going out tomorrow and the day after. Amazon warehouses, you know how it is. You know how the way that your managers and your company are treating you. Just get up and walk around the world, you know, around in Britain. Come out. If you're here in Britain, find a CWU picket line. It will be outside any of the Royal Mail depots to join tomorrow or Friday. Don't do anything that will get you in trouble legally. Check this with your legal status, right? But if, like I said, if all of you go at once, they can't fire you. You know, you can do those walkouts. So go for it. It's, you know, come and join us. Because eventually you're going to need to do this anyway. I don't necessarily think now, in hindsight, the CWU are in the best position to be the union for all Amazon workers. But there are plenty of unions out there who are organising Amazon, both directly on the ground. And some of the, as we've seen, I think it's fair to say, and I think it's a good point, some of the smaller unions we've seen they've done really, really good jobs with the baristas, with the Amazon workers, etc. Check out Organise Now too if you're here in Britain, because they've got some. They've been doing all kinds of organising this week. That's also associated with our good pal Jamie, who comes on the show. We'll come on the show again soon. But yeah, I mean, it's there for the taking. You know, this is funnily enough, I've said to a few people, this is a thing I've been working for now for 2 decades, knowing this kind of conflict was coming, knowing that this is what we needed to be ready for. And as you know very well, I'm not always as ready as I could be, which is why you get repeated phone calls every day, even though it's an agreement you sent me 3 weeks ago that I still haven't read. But nevertheless, you know, the point
John,
is...
John, I'll pretend you're ready. I got your back.
Let's just say I know where to go when I need the information.
100 million%. Yeah.
But it is, on a personal note now, I know we're getting slightly off the subject of what we were talking about. We'll come back to that in a minute. But I don't normally talk about terms like pride. I find it a bit... I don't mean that in the political sense. No disrespect to the...
Sorry to cut in there, John. John, you're going to be passionate because me and you are going to lose 2 days' worth of money to protest. Of course we're going to be passionate, John. You go ahead.
Of course we are. Yeah, but it is, you know, a pride is something I find a little bit cringy. I sometimes associate it with the worst elements of society, because majority of pride is to do with things that you had nothing to do with, like where you come from, etc. And also, you know, I've always considered it, you know, I read it as being a sin when I was younger. But waffling aside, I've never been prouder than I am right now in my workplace to stand with my members who are seeing absolutely the writing that's on the wall of what's going on here. They know what these other companies, these gig economy companies look like, and they know that our aim in life is to bring them up to our standard, not to bring us down to theirs. They can see this as plain as anything. And I know, Thompson, that you think that we can't see this. You think that this workforce is stupid. You think we're thickos that you can talk down to. No, they're the ones around the desk that you sit at every day, okay? And the workforce we have here, and in particular my members, have been absolutely fantastic, absolutely magnificent, and they're going to be tomorrow and the day after, they're going to be next week if it's necessary, because Royal Mail haven't surrendered yet, but they will, and they're going to be all through December if that is what's necessary, and we'll go straight into the bleak midwinter with big smiles on our faces, because we are united, we are strong, and we know exactly what your game is, and we're going to shut you down, we're going to stop you from doing it, okay? And That's it, basically. That's the simplest part about it, you know? We are not backing down on this. We're never going to. And, I feel like I'm saying the same thing in circles now, because this I didn't script this part. But
you can't script destruction of jobs. It's nothing. You can sit down, especially when you work for them, John. And John rings me in the day to talk about many things happening in the workplace, and he's always on delivery. I heard some dogs the other day barking at him, but I will have a word with those dogs. You say you're talking to a broadcaster here, pack it in.
Don't you know who I am?
But he's out there delivering, going to every address on his round, as he's been done for many years. And people like John and many of you out there do what you do fantastically and keep that company running. And all we're asking, especially in the economic crisis, is that the business you work for reward you accordingly. That's all we're asking, not just Royal Mail workers, but every worker. And that's what we're asking. We don't want anarchy, as the media would have you believe, because they use the narrative walkout, like we've just walked out. And so all of a sudden we've got two heads, you know, that sort of thing. We just want basic stuff. The alternative, if we don't do that, the alternative is destruction, and things that we love and liked and you were used to will never, ever come back. So, John, you're entitled to it, as I am, because, as I said, we're going to lose 2 days' worth of pay during the worst economic time since God knows when. But for some reason, our members, all members of a trade union, feel that passionate. And yes, John, let's be honest, we're scared, but we've got to do it, John.
Yeah, I mean, this is, as I say, this is the toughest fight we face, but we are facing it. We're facing it every single day, and we're gonna win, and we're gonna have a good Christmas. I mean, that's me saying it. You know how much I hate Christmas, fucking hell. But you're not gonna make us stand down on that. You know, one of the funny things for those of us that have been, you know, volunteering in various sectors relating to food poverty and things like that over the years, is we've learned a tremendous amount of tricks for you know, making food on the cheap. So we've learned tricks for saving energy where we can. We've learned all that stuff. So now you decide to launch this attack against us when we're actually at our strongest when it comes to things like that. You know, we'll just turn off the lights, put a jumper on, and buy the cheap chicken from the chicken breast from the shop on the corner. It's not going to work. You can't beat us. You can't beat us. Anyway, let's just launch into, we can come back to some of this stuff at the end. I'm wary of time. I just want to do two more things here. So firstly, part of our ongoing series, I might do an entire show about this, certainly in regards to the Labour files. But right now, I'll just do perhaps a series about why, unfortunately, the Labour Party are not fit for government at the moment. So story number one, the first in a series of features. Ever since Keir Starmer became leader of the Labour Party, it has focused on nothing but attacking the left. This has included bullying, lying, like the continuing the proven falsehoods against Jeremy Corbyn, and ignoring the in-depth reports from non-mainstream media that found Starmer and his crew to be a gaggle of racists and left bashers with no concept of democracy and no vision for the future, or indeed even for the present. Ian Byrne is one of the many MPs subjected to a stitched-up process of re-selection via trigger ballot, where the right of the party tried to shoehorn in their own obedient candidate to make sure none of the landlords, businessmen or readers of the hate press get any idea that Labour might progressively make the world better for working people if they got into power. Once again, however, they have failed, which is what they do best. Ian Byrne has won his re-selection and remains the MP for Liverpool West Derby. He remains a very popular MP among his constituents because, like Jeremy Corbyn, he is an honest and dedicated man and is dedicated to his job. He has been behind campaigns like Fans Supporting Food Banks. That's football fans addressing the desperate needs of those going without food, which Labour have no policy on. The Right to Food campaign, aiming to make access to food a legal right for all, which also Labour have no policy on. And the Hillsborough Law. He is, in the words of fellow Real MP Zara Sultana, a fierce champion for the working class. There have been serious irregularities reported in the race to be the West Derby candidate, not the only one in fact, including over 150 members allegedly being disenfranchised after being unsubscribed from emails and the party ignoring all efforts to resubscribe them. Some party members falsely claimed to be in arrears, with the party ignoring the proof to the contrary. I also want to remind everyone that at the height of the pandemic, with bodies piling high and government doing nothing except giving contracts to their mates who failed to deliver, the Labour Party were waging war upon themselves. All they cared about then and now was destroying their own MPs and members if they were too left-wing. This is a major factor, no doubt, in why Keir Starmer remained less popular than Boris Johnson, and also one of the strongest moral reasons why I could never support a Labour Party with he and his lackeys leading it. I could never support, I just never supported full stop. They tried to bully and intimidate great MPs and councillors like Ian Byrne and Pamela Fitzpatrick and let the fevered egos like Wes Streeting and Jess Phillips piss the party into complete worthlessness. This week, Starmer took to the stage at the CBI and tried to divide the workers with anti-immigrant rhetoric around cheap labour in another of this bitch's endless throwbacks to the Blair era, and to suck on that little Daily Mail dick. You are the epitome of cheap labour, mate. You really are. Keir Starmer is cheap labour, both morally and practically unfit for government. So good on you, Ian Byrne. Consolidations to some of those that have been targeted already, like Sam Tarry, but hang in there, mate, because you will get back. People want you because you're the right kind of MP. But good on you, Ian. Thank you for setting those things up, and you've certainly got the support from our end. Dave, what's your take on this? I need better catchphrases, don't I, rather than just constantly asking you about your take. So, you still there? Okay. All right, I'll go into something else then until you...
Oh, sorry, John, I was listening, but I'm watching the football as well. Canada, I just hope Canada win. Anyway, you carry on.
No, that was it. I just wanted to know what you made of Ian Byrne, you know, obviously.
Well, I think the Labour Party got to expect what they don't like, what they don't think is electable in their view, and I think they better get used to it, because the NEC, National Executive Committee, is made up of people that were democratically voted for, not a 1922 committee. There's many of us. We went on recommendations who to put in, and they live with it. Get over it, because we're always going to be there. We've got a number of delegates that we've put in there for working class, and live with it. There's 25. I think we're up to about 12. That's half. So I know you put Mr. Starmer up there but he will only quote what the NEC recommends. That's it. And if we put more people in the NEC, National Executive Committee, and it is democratically voted for by Labour Party members, live with it. Until you change that system, live with it. But I tell you what, I'm out of that party if they go to a 1922 committee regime. And we all know that was successful, didn't we, John?
Yeah, that did wonders, didn't it? Yeah, truly wondrous. Yeah, I mean, as I say, this is we have the case. I'm wary of talking about this in too much detail, purely because I'd rather have the facts to hand so I can talk about it properly. But you know, obviously, the case with Absalma Begum, whose hideous bullying by her ex-husband has basically been weaponized by the Starmerites because she's an effective left-wing MP. Zara Sultana's she's had a few attacks, but she's quite high profile at the moment, so I don't think they're able to pick on her to quite the degree they want to. They will, though. The manner in which they weaponize attacks against Diane Abbott has been truly disgusting. But also, you know, again, it's come into the news this week because some washed up second rate comedian has decided to make a television show about a book claiming that folks like him are on the bottom scale where racism is concerned, which is a great move, Mr. Badil. Is absolutely a great way to address racism is to set up a kind of hierarchy so that we're all sniping at each other rather than talking about the main issues. So thanks for doing that. But anyway, a good time to...
Is Badil going on about anti-Semitism type thing?
Of course, he always does. He has done for a long time.
Well, again, look, I'm not saying it doesn't exist. I'm just saying...
Nobody ever did.
No, and absolutely. Look, can we just take this into perspective? It's racism, okay? It's not anti-Semitism, which, I'll say it again, we couldn't spell before 2017. It's racism. It's a racist stuff that's going on. You can't have racism within racism and then call it something else. It's racism. And I'll tell you why it's racism. It's because... Muslim people are seen as some sort of devil. We had the acid in the face attacks based on a previous prime minister, journalistic, well, I think loosely termed, issues about calling Muslims letterboxes, and young Muslim girls attacked with acid thrown on their faces, or any acid attack, to be honest. It's horrible. It's racist, right? We have to call it what it is. So don't pretend that it's a racism within racism within racism, because you insult ethnic minorities' intelligence. And I'll tell you why you do, because I've experienced racism throughout the 70s and 80s, okay? And it's bad. And to have schools with barbed wire and security guards, it's racism. But we need to look further into that, and where did this ism come from? It's from the wealthy, okay? That's where it started from. We all agree on that. So can we just stop talking about it like it's something within something? It's racism, John.
Yeah, I mean, on that subject, and, I haven't actually watched the programme yet. I'm aware of the book, and I've seen all of the takedowns of it. Yeah, you talk about being subjected to racism as an ethnic minority. No doubt, in many ways, from David Badil, because as people have shown from showing up some of his old TV programmes and stuff, he used to actually lean on racist tropes rather a lot, including calling a young group of Africans a terrorist cell when he was trying to get some petrol from them, which is a lovely way to talk about people when they can't understand the same language. From what little take I have on this, and I suppose I better come with one because I was the idiot that brought it up, I always address, and as we've done on this show before, Dave, I always address racism of all types equally, because it's all terrible no matter what, whether it's the same kind of hate. It may not be race, but it's the same kind of hatred that's repackaged against Gypsy Roma traveller people, among other things, against East Asian people, which, of course, we don't talk about as much as we should, and just the usual old-fashioned horrible type. No one's saying, and nobody ever did say, there was never a problem with anti-Semitism. There was never really a problem with it on the left. That was vastly overblown. And there was never a problem with it coming from Jeremy Corbyn, because the man is not an anti-Semite, never has been, never will be. Although at the same time, to even respond to that in some ways is actually to respond to this straw man argument. What did happen, and I'm sorry to say for Jewish people, is that they got used. They got used as a political tool, and by a group of people like Starmer and his backers, like the people in the media who were scared to death of a socialist government, and like the Tories for the same reason. You got used as a political tool by people who couldn't care less about you, and that's really sick and degenerate. But then what did you expect from these folks? They are immoral and truly awful. So that's something I will state very clearly. Neither Corbyn nor any of us who were supporters and remain supporters of his work ever had any bone to pick with Jewish people. We do have a bone to pick with Zionists, as most of my Jewish friends do, because that is a political ideology. And the identification of all Jewish people with Zionism or with the State of Israel is itself an anti-Semitic trope, and I completely reject it, as many people do. What this is also really about is foreign policy, because Jeremy Corbyn had very, very strong principles on foreign policy throughout Latin America, throughout, he was the kind of person who was bringing up the workers working themselves to death to build football stadiums in Qatar before it was a popular thing to do. But also because he is a supporter of Palestinian rights and a critic of Israel, as am I. And the weird thing about pointing out that Israel is an apartheid state is it's dramatically less controversial to do when you're in Israel than it is outside of it. It's a stance they take internationally. They use it to try and cover themselves. They use it to try and claim that any criticism of them, you know, murdering Palestinian teenagers who are unarmed is in fact, you're being anti-Semitic by mentioning this. No one, I think, is silly enough who listens to this show at least to fall for that. But B, you know, it's blatantly obvious to see what that is. It's you wouldn't put up with it coming from anybody anywhere else. And, you know, as I say, this whole thing was just you. I hate to rehash it, but it kind of feels like it's been rehashed this week. As far as, a full position on that program, and I mean, firstly, I'd recommend checking out some of Navarro's content. I think Ash Sarka summed it all up very well on Monday night on Tisky Sour. But one of the things I first thought watching the trailer for it is, oh, blimey, that's David Schwimmer. Has anyone seen him since 2006? It's just amazing you getting all these people on to talk about. It's just kind of like, these people are all like, these people are people with a career yesterday. Suddenly they want to be on a television program talking about, you know, this, that and the other. But, you know, there are real issues out there. We know they are. But we address them. A good way of addressing any kind of racism that happens to you, particularly in the workplace, is to bring it up with your trade union, which will almost certainly have an anti-racist policy, which ours certainly does. So, I don't know. A bit random, but I think you get where I'm going there. Should I start to close out, Dave? Do you have anything else you want to add on that?
No. And I'll say this again. I've had people on here, fair play to them, as guests, and quite rightly, they've made their point of view very clear on racism and rights and LGBT community rights. John certainly doesn't talk the talk. He goes out there, and in fact, we've broadcasted many of the live, or recorded those live interviews that John has done. And in fact, I can't stop him. He keeps bloody going out there and protesting. So well done, John, and be careful, because otherwise I'll have to be your bodyguard, and I just cannot hit another white man anymore. John?
our wistful 20s. I just wanted to say in closing, I'm not going to discuss the autumn statement in detail because you can get that from the professionals, but there are a couple of things worth mentioning that I thought came up, and really I've got just something here commenting on the autumn statement. There's a wonderful quote here from Unite General Secretary Sharon Graham, who said the following: "Our economy is broken. This autumn statement is not for working people. The Chancellor has taxed income over wealth, backed city bankers instead of nurses, and chosen profiteers over public services. He has made political choices based on rules that he himself has the power to change. Austerity and tax rises for workers will do nothing to create decent jobs or put money in our pockets. As a country, we must now begin a discussion on how to do things differently. We need different rules and to make different choices. We need an economy that works for all." I thought that was a really good quote, and I couldn't have put it better myself. However, for whatever it's worth, a friend of mine asked me recently what we can do in these difficult times. And the response I gave them is there's times we're living in which are an emergency, which the Trussell Trust, who run food banks in this country, are absolutely accurate in calling it an emergency. This ain't a cost of living crisis. It's an emergency, and emergencies require action. We continue to struggle, but that's not enough. Anyway, what could we do? Well, here's a start. Demand a tax on profits, rent control, wage rises in line with inflation, overthrow of the present political order, and that's just for starters. That's my position that I'm going to take forward in absolutely any and every way that I possibly can. These are the terrible decisions of government. And ultimately, we have to make ourselves ungovernable. These are drastic and painful times, but in the words of William Burroughs, desperation is the raw material for drastic change. And that's always worth remembering. Blimey, we started late and I finished 3 minutes early, Dave.
John, just from a mainstream point of view, obviously, look, we shouldn't despair, because most of the comments I get from normal mainstream people is this: that's terrible. What John said was talking about was terrible. What you're talking about with Royal Mail is terrible. And I love Royal Mail and I couldn't bear to see. But a lot of them have said, John, I know the answer, but a lot of people have said, why doesn't everyone go out and strike at the same time?
Mm.
And what are the TUC? Because it's a TUC, don't know how powerful it is, because even the most mainstream person quotes it. Why don't the TUC, and it's a great quote by Sharon Graham, but they may ask me, and they're asking me, why don't we all go out at once, John?
Well, my take on that is I would split that question, if you don't mind, I'll split it in two. And the reason why I would do that is because I believe there is the answer to that question before the present situation that we're in, and the answer to it now. So, what should I say about this? I mean, basically, we're in the middle of a period when there's a lot of balloting, a lot of strike action, a lot of these things happening, which are kind of happening naturally anyway. They are not centrally controlled by the TUC. They are controlled by the individual trade unions and their members themselves. Now, there is benefits to both sides, I think. There is some benefit to central control, but there's also some benefit to people, you know, just deciding to walk when it suits them or voting in favour of those situations. There is always maybe we should do an entire show about this concept, but the tipping point. There is always the ever-present notion of the tipping point, which is why I've had this conversation with people so many times over the years, talking about actions, talking about revolutions, everything, you know, why has this suddenly happened then and didn't happen before, et cetera, et cetera. Sometimes it just takes a particular tipping point in order for such things to take place. So beforehand, this is I'll take your take on this too, Dave, because I think you've got more experience than I have on this. This is my take. You have to be very wary in calling for a general strike for a number of reasons. One is because the portion of people in work not represented by a trade union, I don't know what the figures are anymore because they have changed, but it's still pretty large in this country. We're not back in the days of you know, 6 million people in unions or whatever or more. So we're not in that. And the possibility there is that it could fail. And if it fails, that would be a terrible self-own for any trade union or anyone else around it, or any trade union body, I should say. Saying that, the times we're living in now, again, with many of the changes we talked about tonight, and many of the offers of work being nothing more than dystopian and truly nightmarish, the kind of things that we used to confine to science fiction are now everyday fact, thanks to Amazon, etc., and what Royal Mail are trying to do to their workforce. With things like that happening, I actually wonder if... I kind of think a general strike might take place without it being called for. Do you know what I mean? I think it will just grow. I think everyone will just go. And if any unions can, you know, do actions on the same day, again, that's pretty good. Don't expect the media to respond to that unless they're in the mood to do so. They might just use it as an excuse to ignore it. But I think that's probably the case. I think we are kind of going to effectively get a general strike without it necessarily being called that, except in hindsight. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. As I said, look, I've met many people in industries. People, industries I've represented. A lot of law firms I've represented, secretaries in there, estate agents, travel agents I've represented. And they all said, if we all could go at once, we would. And that's great to hear. But as John said, it's about organising. But during the pandemic, there was a rise in trade union membership, which is great. And it would also be interesting to do it globally as well, John. That would, you know.
Again, if you'd asked me this 2 years ago, You know, I would have said, yeah, in my dreams, mate. I don't know. I can see
well,
it
happening. I think if we speak to Francesco, absolutely, in his part of the world, or his part of the world that he broadcasts for or represents, absolutely. What we got to get round, and we don't hate the UK, me and John. We're just saying that you're apathetic. And we're not saying pathetic. We're just saying that you're used to accepting it. For a country that, what it says during, say, Brexit, what it says, what it represents, and there's a lot of passion. I just saw a lot of misplaced passion. We didn't see the bigger picture. And if we could take that passion and say, well, we want the best for every worker in the UK, and stop saying we want what's best for white people, or we want what's best for black people, or which is not going to be the case, let's be honest. It's, you know, and say what's best for working people, because we've got more in common, haven't we, than colour? We've got more in common that we all have to work for a living. We all have that in common. So we have more in common than what we don't have in common, right?
Yeah, more in common than what divides us, as I say.
Yeah, and I'm not being hippie. I'm just saying we do have more in common than, you know, Brexit or whatever.
So, and it's situations like this that show you how much we have in common. I mean, just quickly on that, Dave, I was going to come back and just say, the, you know as well as I do, you get this stuff. I mean, you have to use social media, thankfully, more than I do. I appreciate your sacrifice. But, you know, in the last couple of years, how much of that kind of divisive, and I mean, the first kind of anti-immigrant bullshit I've heard in the longest time has come out of Keir Starmer this week. I've not seen people getting hung up on that. I've not had people talking about the tabloid headlines. In, you know, you'd see tabloid headlines sometimes. You go, oh God, that person I know in my family, that person I know at work, I'm going to go in tomorrow and see them. They're going to go on about this, that, and the other. They're just the perfect audience for that. That hasn't happened. Again, this is completely just based on personal experience. It's not really, it's anecdotal evidence. It's not really real, but that just seems to be happening much. It just seems to be working less. I think the unrelenting horror of that press has not stopped in for a minute, but I just think the things they try and do are working less and less and less. Or is it just me?
No, I think there's a political... I think whoever is advising me is telling me to test the waters on that to see... Because what's going to happen is, John... look, I'm not saying either way. I agree 100% with you. But what I'm saying is, what's going to happen is, he's testing the water to grab any Tory voters or any Labour voters that went to Tories in those red wall areas. But secondly, this is important, because it's my job to be tactical, right, politically and otherwise, because apparently I'm branch secretary, some idiot gave me that title. My view is that he wants, and it will be forced, and this will destroy a political party. That political party, which is just caretaking at the moment, let's be honest, because of its growth and lack of growth in the UK, will have to join the common market again. But he doesn't want to do it, say it yet. He won't say it. So he wants the other party to do it, because that's the only ticket in town. You have to join the common market. And what that will do, John, is destroy the party permanently. Not temporarily, permanently. Because that's most of its base, its Brexiters. And that will kill off... our friend Mr. Farage as well, who's made a living out of that.
Who, by the way, congratulated Starmer on his speech the other day. Just throwing that out there.
Yeah. So we're just testing the water. I'm not saying it's right. I'm not saying it's wrong. I'm just saying politically, as a tactician, he's tempting the other side to destroy itself. Not temporarily, John. Permanently. Yeah. We're talking about a permanent destruction of a political party by having to rejoin common market. He's not saying it. He's close to saying it, but he's tempting the other side too. But I'm not saying you're wrong. I need to speak to Mr. So-and-so, because I've done business with him on racism in the police force in the 90s. So I know about Mr. So-and-so, and I want to have words with Mr. So-and-so. But all I did do is vote for a working class National Executive Committee members. One of them was Jewish, by the way, and the anti-Semitism crew who slated Mr. Corbyn for being anti-Semitic, slated this young Jewish girl that we got voted in, and nothing was said about anti-Semitism.
Yep. Yep.
Stick up your arse, John. Not you, indeed. John, but you know what I'm saying.
No. Sorry. That was a stick up your arse, full stop, and then my name. I get you. Don't mind me. It's all good. I mean, as I said, you know, as we said earlier this evening, our 20s were a long time ago, and I think that counts for Mr. Starmer as well. But some of us never actually sold out our principles. And when it comes down to it, you know, folks like you and me, Dave, we are pro-working class and have been so for a very long time. We're anti-racist and we've been so for a very long time, and we've proved it on multiple occasions. We are not going to be lectured by anyone about what to do on this stuff. I'll listen to people.
Yeah, no, I congratulate you for what you are and what you do. I have to be anti-racist because it's what I am. But yeah, we'd sure. like to thank you because you don't have to do what you do and go and marches up Chapter... I mean, who goes up Chapter Road these days?
I was in Whitechapel the other day.
Yeah, I mean, going up Chapter Road, I thought, oh, my God, you know. So it's good what you do, but it kind of, you know, over the years, and when you did it, and this was several years ago, and when I think back on it, you know, I spoke to my sisters about it, and I said, one of our presenters were brought... you know, protesting up Chapter Road. And they said, what, Chapter Road? I said, yeah, he was representing some Muslim people, you know. Not people, you know what I'm saying.
Yeah,
Which they found, I said, well, Chapter Road, I mean, you know, because we were associate Chapter Road with that part of London. There's always been ethnic minority, but, you know, and you took the time out to do it. So we... you know, thank you, John. You know, because we should be doing more instead of punching people in the face.
Yeah, it's an honour to do such things.
Or burning pubs down in Southport.
Oh, yes. Those were the days. There's some nostalgia for you. I'll just say in closing, speaking of nostalgia, the one thing I will say about the state of this country in closing is, again, I've criticised Labour a great deal tonight, so you know this isn't about party allegiance. The next time anyone talks to you about the winter of discontent, just tell them to shut the fuck up. Because we have so... But it's not even halfway through the winter, and we have bypassed that.
Isn't it weird how history turns on its arse, John?
Yes.
You know, because just to say, a political party is synonymous with people being skint and having to go on strike... And you not getting your bins emptied, which was what the narrative was, wasn't it? Bodies not getting buried and bins not being emptied. God, how worse can it be now, you know?
No, exactly. Anyway, you get on and play some music for these fine folks. They've heard me yelling at them for an hour now. That's enough. And then we both have to get to bed because we've got picket lines to run in the morning.
Thank you very much, John.
Thanks, mate. See you soon.
All the Rage with John Bowd. On www.tracksfm.org.